Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get your free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/FTSW. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Come to Air Temple Island, your new home. I'm the Avatar. You gotta chill with it.
You're the Avatar, and I'm an idiot.
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
Go away, Mako.
Don't worry. I will protect you, my feeble turtle duck.
I will make no such promises.
Bolin's got some moves, huh?
You amuse me. I will make you mine.
You shall meet again soon, beautiful woman.
I can't wait to get started. Yes! Finally!
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DongluFang.net. If you want extensive discussion on Korra from longtime fans of Avatar, then this is the podcast for you. I am your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Sam.
Oh, I'm first. That's great. Hi, everybody.
Jeff.
Hello.
Delaney.
Yo.
And Allie.
Whoa, I'm last. Okay.
Yes.
That works.
Today we'll be discussing a new spiritual age. We're very excited to discuss this episode.
I'm dying.
So much to discuss. I don't know. Everyone's really excited. This is a great episode, and it's going to be great. So we didn't discuss the episode. We don't really have much news. And then we have a bunch of voicemails and emails hopefully to read. And yeah,
can we call it the mailbag segment? Because I missed the mailbag segment.
I know.
The mailbag.
The mailbag. Sure, we'll call it the mailbag. We have
a mailbag.
Here's the mail.
In Korra news, we have the last four episode descriptions. I don't want to read them because they're kind of spoilers. But yeah, the last episodes will be airing in the next 2 weeks, two next week, and the two the week after, starting at 8 o'clock. And we have descriptions, and they give away the ending of Harmonic Convergence, but that's okay. And yeah, you can check those out at dongufeng.net or dongufeng.tumblr.com. And the guide got 2.473 million viewers, which is very much up from last week. It's the second highest rated this season. It's still in the twos, which is bad, but I didn't think it would hit 2 million again this season, so that's very good. Nick has re-put SpongeBob as Korra's lead-in, which means more people are watching Nickelodeon going into Korra.
Yo, did you see the preview for SpongeBob during the commercial?
Oh my god!
It looks great. Bob loses his job.
Yeah, that's great, right? Thank you. Thank you
for sharing. So enthusiastic, Dylan.
I don't care about SpongeBob. Thank you. More people watching Korra, that's good.
Because of SpongeBob. Be happy, Dylan.
Because of SpongeBob.
Well, meh.
SpongeBob's still 43% of Nickelodeon's programming, so, you know,
just not
good. But, anyway, yeah, let's get right into this episode. Very excited. Give me your initial impressions on a new spiritual age. Let's start with Jeff.
Definitely, I think my favorite one. Very, very closely tied with the beginnings ones. I'm still sort of not liking their use of the spirit waterbending thing as like the catch-all for whatever. Like, I have no idea how it works and what it can do. Apparently, it can like kill people.
apparently, yeah.
And I wish I knew why Korra was a kid, but I'm okay with that. But yeah, overall, it's really great. Love this. Love the story of this one.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll definitely be talking about Korra as a kid. We have differing opinions on that. Allie, what'd you think?
Oh god, wait me. Okay. Well, first of all, animation. I'm really glad Studio Mayor is back. And I don't know. Going off what Jeff said about like the waterbending thing, I'm not sure if I like it. And I'm pretty sure it won't be explained, but, like, I don't think it can kill people. Maybe it's just, like, the spirit. Like, spirit. Right. Like, killing a spirit. Yeah. Like, not their actual being. And then, just Jenora. So, oh my god. I'm, like, I don't know. I'm sad, but that was amazing. It was probably my favorite episode of the season.
Awesome. Delaney.
Loved it. I'm really hesitant to call anything my favorite now because I keep doing this whole spastic thing every time we talk about episodes. So I'm going to wait until we see the whole season and then I'll pick favorites. But I really, really, really like this one. I was completely into it, which I think the last week's... We had an episode last week, right? Yeah, the guide.
Yeah.
I just wasn't as into it. I'm really into this week's episode. And where I was in the floor when Iroh came on.
You were in the floor.
I was in the floor. I was like flailing off the couch, and my mom was like, "Oh my god, Iroh!" Like my mom got pumped. So clearly, it was a good episode. But I mean, I just loved it. However, like, I mean, the spirit bending thing didn't bother me so much as Korra being a child, so that's my only real problem with the episode. But I really enjoyed it.
Awesome. Sam.
Well, sorry my voice cracked. I really like this episode. Like Delaney said, I probably wouldn't, like, I'm really hesitant to call it like a favorite, but it might just be my favorite episode thus far. The animation was really sure. The animation was really beautiful. Iroh, of course, baby Korra. Jinora is like becoming my favorite character. I love her. So yeah, that's how I feel.
She's totes Hermione.
Oh my god.
She's Aang and Hermione
she
combined.
She looks so much like Aang, it makes me want to
cry. Yes.
Yeah, feels.
Yeah,
it's like it's amazing.
And all his really facial expressions.
Makes me sad.
This was an amazing episode. I liked it better than Beginnings Part 2, which makes it my favorite Korra.
Wait, really?
Yeah. By a fair amount, too.
He's obsessed with Jinora, remember?
Oh yeah, but
this totally makes sense.
I will defend this.
I'm not hating.
The first two acts of this episode, which are like the first segment before a commercial and then the second segment before the second commercial, are basically pure bliss. Like, they're pretty perfect.
That's the best description.
And then the third part made me want to die.
And then we get the third part, which is also very good, I actually thought.
I thought the third part was the best part.
See, I think it had some problems, but I don't know. I think this episode had a slight structuring problems, but I thought Tim executed the script basically perfectly. I thought maybe when they were talking about what's going to go in this episode as a writer's room, they made a few miscalculations, maybe not. I'm honestly not sure, and I'm very eager to get into discussing things like whether Korra should have been a baby, and like how they handled, does Jinora turn into a plot device at the end? Stuff like that, I think, is interesting to talk about. There's nothing that is purely bad other than maybe the unexplained random soul bending. But even that, it's fine. The animation was amazing. The score was amazing. Jeremy Zuckerman brought back in the third act.
I know what it was.
And
I don't
used,
know
and
what
he used a new Spirit World theme, and it was amazing. And just the best core episode. It was so good, so good. I don't even know like how we're going to discuss the first two acts that well. I'm actually, Iroh was one of the things I wasn't even as high on. Like, I thought that was really good, but that's another thing we'll see. Was that idea like good? I don't know. We'll talk about it. Obviously, we all freaked out over Iroh being there. Like, obviously,
because it comes out of the mist, and you're like, "What?" And then I'm in the war.
I heard his voice, and I was like, "Oh my god, no!"
Yes, Greg Baldwin.
I was like, "Thank you, ads, for not spoiling this."
Yeah, that's true.
Yes. Yeah, that was
good job.
Yeah.
I had no idea that was coming up. Actually,
well, Nickelodeon didn't really promote this. Nickelodeon's ads for Korra are still the same ones that they've been using in the beginning, so
which is really
maybe more laziness than.
Well, I'm glad because I think that's the main reason why I really like this episode so much, is because I actually haven't been shocked watching a Korra episode until that moment, and I was in the floor. Shocked.
I think maybe the main points of discussion will be Korra's development, which is what they are trying to make this episode about.
Turning her into a child.
Yeah, I didn't even.
They did a good job.
I didn't even mention Jinora yet, but it's so weird seeing Jinora in this episode because she didn't really have a personality before. So everything everything simultaneously seems out of character and like a new part of her, because like she's spoken what, like 10 times total throughout the series, so it's interesting. And
you've been spending a lot of time with him lately.
Yeah, that's like one of her 10 lines, right? so let's get into it.
You couldn't see it, but I did the hand thing she did.
Thank you, Sam. I still have the guide right there. A New Spiritual Age, written by Tim Hedrick, and directed by Ian Graham. Tim, once again, returned to form. We said that about Beginnings Part 2. But yeah, Tim's amazing. So it's interesting, though, that he's writing this. There's so many elements of this. There's so many Avatar Flash callbacks, right? None of them are Tim's. None of them are from Tim episodes, so we'll get into specific ones. The A plot, so basically this episode doesn't really have an ABC structure. It's structured, it has bookends grounded in, the real world, the first scene and the last scene, and then everything else is in the spirit world, which I thought was a great decision. Once we're in the spirit world, once we're in the spirit world, everything else will seem really unexciting compared to it, so we really need to stay there, which I thought was a very well calculated.
good decision.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes, definitely.
This was so good.
But yeah, the first scene we see is in the main world. Lol. Siblings. Tenzin is worried about Jinora.
Or as Mal would say, the three idiots.
The three idiots. Yeah.
Three stooges.
Boomy's like, they say no bending will leave them defenseless. Boomy has a positive attitude. Someone was like, that reminds me of Sokka, when Kaya said Boomy's positive attitude.
Like, Kaya reminded them of Sokka, or?
Well, just that whole thought process, right?
Was that the one expecting you to say, but you have your boomerang? Like, I was expecting that to come out.
That's what I thought was going to happen, yeah.
I don't know why.
He was going to say, like, because, I mean, you've been a non-bender your whole life, so. Well,
that's the logical thing to say.
I'm just saying.
I was definitely expecting boomerang.
Yeah, boomerang.
No, that didn't work.
I don't know what you're saying, but yeah.
Anyway, boomerang.
Okay. Did you guys like the scene better than previous sibling relationship scenes?
Yes.
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 I don't want to hate on
it. Fighting. Hate negativity.
I wasn't bitter. It was
I don't want to say I don't care, but I don't have an opinion on it. Like, it was fine.
It's definitely underwhelming compared to the rest of this episode.
Yeah, I guess that's fine.
Yeah.
But it was still better than the whole entire episode they dedicated on it.
Yes.
I don't. It's hard. It's easy to say that. This was only a minute long, so I don't know.
Well,
I don't know if you can say that. They had less time to screw it up.
Just
anyway, I don't know.
That was such a nice thing to say.
I just said it.
I do think that I understand you just said it. I do think this benefited from us knowing the characters more now.
I guess.
Anyway. Maybe we're just used to it.
Yeah, I still don't know how well they're handling Boomy and Kaya, but it was fine right now. Fine.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know about Tenzin, but like, I don't know how to feel about how they're doing.
Yeah, Boomy, I actually thought the last two episodes Tenzin's been definitely better than the rest of the season.
This episode he was so good. Well,
last episode I did not like Tenzin.
Me neither.
Well, okay, yeah. Well,
he was good in this.
This episode
we discussed
so
that last podcast, but yeah,
Like, back to what you were saying, like, on the last podcast about who voices Tenzin? I forgot his name.
J.K. Simmons.
Yeah.
He did such a good job with this one at the end.
I definitely felt his emotion at the end of this one. It was not single voice J.K. Simmons anymore.
It was enthusiastic.
Yeah. That scene very much called for it, so that was very
just
good.
Heart punch. Yes.
Okay, let's get into the spirit world. We see awesome music, awesome visuals. Right away, it's like, okay, this is good. And the spirits, Jinora is like, the spirits are more beautiful in their home world. And right away, that's like more than Jinora said all of the show. So, I mean, that line is like distinctive from what she said before, I think. And we've never seen her like, we've seen, last episode we saw her be like, oh, I'm all spiritual and stuff. But we never really saw her like,
say anything important.
Like, it's like anything about the spirits, anything about like the spirits in the spirit world, you know. It's just, it's right into it. It's a little jarring maybe, but it's fine, obviously.
Cora went on a life-changing field trip with Jinora.
So is Jinora
the new thing. Jinora's the new Zuko.
Yeah. Please don't say that again.
She has, like, the ponytail, too. Sort of.
No, she does. She
is the bun.
No. She does.
Is she going to get a scar? Oh, I hope not.
No. Yes.
No.
Yeah, please, no.
She just might.
No bending is... They're defenseless, Cora says, and positive attitude. Why?
No,
you're reading...
Oh, that was up before. Okay. Spirits more beautiful on the homeworld. Groundhogs. Okay, yeah.
I was angry, so disappointed in Korra, like, you're in their territory, they don't want you here, and your reaction is to attack them with bending? Come on.
I mean, but
you know what? Aang would probably just make them sing.
This is like, true. Okay, here's our plot development. We're going to start here,
yeah,
and we're going to end up here with Korra, you know?
On a mountain.
Okay, but that's
it was,
true.
By the way, that was the Lord of the Rings, but...
Yes.
So, I don't know, random groundhog spirits, they talk, they mad.
This is Alice in Wonderland, actually.
This whole episode is really Alice in Wonderland.
It really was.
Jinora's... Okay, so then, for like a few scenes in the beginning, Jinora's voice, voiced by Kieran and Shipka, sounded a little different.
I didn't notice that.
I don't know. I also watch Kieran and Shipka on Mad Men. And I don't know. She does creaky voice a lot. It's like a linguistic term, but it's like when you talk like that, like females do that, especially for like, it's like kind of like a social thing. It's weird. But,
like what Tara Strong does for Raven. Sorry.
Like you do it. You're kind of just doing it right now, but I'm doing it right now too. But anyway, I don't know. She does it a lot, but, and I guess maybe it's a lack of creaky voice. I don't know.
You know,
she sounded different, but
their voices change.
Anyway. energy is upsetting them, says Jinora. It's your energy, yeah. So I don't know why Jinora knows that.
Because she has a connection to the spirits.
Yeah,
she reads books.
She reads books, therefore knows.
She has everything. Bunny friends.
I mean, she got into the bunny spirit friends. World.
Yeah, that didn't make much sense either, but whatever. They go into the ground, into the ocean, and we see just awesome random spirit things.
Alligator.
The thing swallows them.
A little bit more like a Komodo dragon to me.
We saw this in the trailer.
Let's not get nitpicky up in here.
I mean, who knows what it is. They go down a waterfall spiral thing. They fall into the forest, and then Koro sees giant spirit things.
That are really
good
terrifying.
Design. I love these designs.
Yes.
Yeah. And giant
so cool.
Insect things.
Yeah, and then, well, no, there's the... I don't know if they're both insects. There's two giant things that she sees.
They're like
samurai
weird
things.
One is a, like, centipede gross thing.
She sees a set of three, and then she sees a big bug thing.
Yeah, I think the big bug is the insect.
Yeah, they're both very good. It's just, this whole thing, it's like, okay, this is great. Setting the scene... And then they have this pan shot, which they do again at the end. It's pretty awesome.
We spin in a circle, and I wanted to throw up.
You have motion sickness from watching Korra? Okay.
Yeah.
That's weird, because I have, like, motion sickness when I'm riding, like, vehicles and stuff. I don't get motion sick when I'm in a first-person perspective, like, seeing things move around.
But I wanted to.
You wanted to.
It was really like I didn't like it, that particular part. It just I didn't think it was a good choice. Though I understood its purpose, it just was like weird.
I like how they do this because it's like establishing mystical elements.
Yeah.
In the spirit world.
I mean, I understand the purpose. I just didn't enjoy watching it.
I don't know how that works, but I thought it was interesting. And then we see baby Korra.
I was confused, but it was so cute.
It's actually toddler Korra, but, you know, call her baby Korra.
She's an Audi.
Yeah, she's an Audi. I did have that.
We saw that in episode 1 of season 1, you know.
But still.
Yeah. I just noticed today.
Baby Korra is
a better looking.
Baby Korra is
just point out how big her little belly is, though.
Yes.
And her pants do that thing, like when you're wearing
one pant is rolled up and the other
one pant's rolled up and the other one's rolled up. Oh, that's so cute.
Yes, she's cute. Okay.
Oh, wow.
I wish you would have said, deal with it at some point.
Yes.
I'm kind of happy to do that.
Yeah, me too.
But anyway, she's voiced by Korra Baker. Her name is
Korra,
who's the daughter of D. Bradley Baker.
You know, there's a kid in Titanic that was named Korra.
There's also a person in Once Upon a Time named Korra.
Everybody's just named Korra today.
Anyway, Korra is not, the character was not named after Korra, D. Bradley Baker's daughter, but yeah.
She's named after a dog,
it was,
right?
It was a coincidence.
I thought she was named after a dog.
Yeah, a dog, yeah.
That's nice.
Okay, so then Jinora's separated, and no, I don't want to go that fast around. This whole just sequence, I thought was breathtaking.
What sequence?
The one we were just talking about, of, they fall into the hole, they go...
Oh, they, you don't like that?
It was pretty great.
Breathtaking is a good thing. Spiral around the waterfall, the thing is just all incredible.
It was just nuts, and I loved it.
It was great.
Yeah, loved it. Okay.
I mean, I think that's like the best. I think for me, that's like the best part of the animation in this episode. I can't stand how bright it is in other parts, but I really liked it in the sequence.
It was just so pretty.
I agree. Anyway, so then Jinora's separated. She finds Furryfoot. It's adorable. Jinora rides Furryfoot.
You missed the part where he rubs her belly. Well, she rubs his belly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
okay.
That's a huge
that's
part
so
of like the episode.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, that was
so like Aang.
And the Aang expression where it's coming at her and she's like that.
Yeah, there's a few points when you like
killed me.
She seems like Aang. By the way,
she looks like him.
Oh, compare Jinora's model in this episode to her character model last episode, and you see one of the biggest differences.
Better.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. She looks more real.
And
yes.
She looks more real for a fictional character.
Yeah.
She looks animated.
Then
in the other episodes, everyone always looks so stiff. Like, they move around.
They don't even blink.
And then it's like an awesome treehouse, she says about the spirit library upside down.
Some treehouse.
I don't think she's ever seen a treehouse, I'll be honest.
Do they have treehouses? Oh, I guess Jed had a bunch of treehouses. Jed had tree forts.
Jed!
She's been to a mountain house.
How
I mean,
do
like,
you
I don't
know Jed's dead?
Well, it was very unclear.
So unclear, we don't know.
Spirit library, and then it's like, yay. Okay, so then we see baby Korra. There's She heard the. Oh yeah, she's. Oh, when did she swat the bird? I didn't even write that.
In the scene.
Okay. She swats the birdie, and then she's sad, and then Iroh comes out, and he's like, "Hello, Korra."
And I almost peed.
Voiced by Greg Baldwin, who voices Iroh in season 3 of Avatar. And yeah, how do you think of this cliffhanger thingy?
Cliffhanger?
For this act, yeah.
I'm just sorry for my roommate because I was, after that happened, no, I was like screaming in my pillow until the commercials ended. And I was like, I'm sorry. And she's like, is this show like killing you? I was like, yes.
So Iroh, he's a guy. I don't know why he's here, but it's great.
Yes.
I mean, that's how I feel. We don't know why he, in like Avatar, we had no idea why he like could see Grogu's dragon, so.
Right.
I wondered like if he's, is this his after image, like with the undiscovered, the people in the Nexus in one of the Star Trek films, is this one of his after images, or is he, like, full on there?
Yeah, so he tries to explain it later, but...
yeah, and he does it well. It
doesn't really make
enough.
Sense, though.
So, I guess this is one of the things I was talking about, that it's not like Tim, this isn't Tim's story, right? There's a lot of stuff that's adapted here. This is Aaron Ehas and Elizabeth Walsh, she has this plotline, that Iroh in the spirit world, that was never fully explained. And
I actually almost don't want it to be explained.
Yeah.
Me too.
I'm glad they kept it to a minimum here, definitely. Because, I don't know, I kind of want Aaron to finish
that. I just want to know why he could see spirits in Avatar, not in Korra. Like, that's more...
No, he's like, Jenora, oh my god, dude.
But, like,
he's
not an airbender.
Like, being an airbender doesn't matter.
I mean, firebenders don't really have a strong connection with spirits normally.
Oh my god, it doesn't... I don't think
but
it matters
Iroh.
At all.
I don't think it matters about your nation, yeah.
And it's
but, oh my god, that's so cool! I just realized that they're like,
yeah, they're like
the same person.
It's like The Shining, except
they're definitely the same person.
Yes,
they didn't meet.
He was reincarnated.
They didn't meet
her.
Each other though. Sad.
Oh, maybe they were reincarnated.
Maybe they're the same person, so they can't be on the screen at the same.
That's
time.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He was reincarnated into her.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, in all seriousness, we do need to talk about I like how you changed your avatar during the podcast.
Well,
we need to talk about how reincarnation hasn't been established as something that normal people do and non-Avatar people do in Avatar. So why does Iroh get to go to the spirit? I guess we'll talk about that when he says it.
Well, reincarnation, it's not reincarnation, it's just...
He's being reincarnated, special. But it's interesting. We'll see. It relates to Buddhism and stuff, but baby Korra, we already talked about it. Okay, Korra again. Tea party to celebrate Mei and Jin? Is the second name's wedding?
I have no idea.
Allie, do you know who voiced Mei?
What are you talking about?
The female frog spirit.
No, I wasn't paying attention.
Jenna Varney. You should have figured that out. It's in the credits, yeah.
I need to listen to it again.
Yeah. And
Janet, I still don't understand why are they. I thought they like had been mentioned before because like
no.
He was celebrating their wedding, and Korra's not even like, who are they? They're just she's just like, why are you guys getting married? I was like,
she's a toddler.
Yeah, well, it's unclear whether she's actually a toddler in here or
she wouldn't be as coherent if she was actually a toddler. So I guess she's just a tiny 5-year old.
I know she's not as emotionally developed either.
Or maybe she's just tiny and she's Korra, but she just kind of.
I thought she was
Korra
in baby Korra's body.
No, I got
she was. Both.
Yeah. So, yeah, cool, like, because regular Korra would not have gotten so upset.
No, idea. She's a baby. She's a baby Korra because emotionally she's, like, a toddler, you know?
Yeah.
Someone
made a, like, good explanation on Tumblr. I'll see if I can find it, but...
Anyways, Spirit Cakes and Iroh's like, wait, they don't get you it. And...
Ew!
That's Iroh's left. Teapot.
That's
true.
And Iroh says this is his favorite thing that he found in the spirit world.
I'm curious if they picked a teapot just to bring Iroh back, or if they brought Iroh back just because there's a teapot. They're definitely related.
I think they thought of both of them, yeah. And I don't understand how the teapot got to the spirit world.
Maybe
you can't just leave it there.
Did we ever see it, like, after they got bonded in the spirit battle?
Yeah, that's true.
We should just be happy it's not broken somewhere.
So we're gonna have to look.
So this means Iroh at some point went into the place where Vatu is trapped.
In order to retrieve
the teapot. Oh, I want a comic on this. And he must have met Vatu. I wonder what they talked about.
Oh.
I bet they played Pai Show.
He played Paisho with the imprisoned body.
Definitely.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah.
That's such an Iroh thing to do.
And he says, you can taste a little light in every cup. So,
That was dumb.
The main thing I took away from them bringing Iroh back is the extreme dependence on his lines of wisdom. He says they fit in about like 10 of them.
That's Zuko's plotline.
About like love, about spirits and love and stuff.
Yeah, it's just like every possible thing he can say some cliche on, right? He says, I don't know.
Well, if they're gonna bring him back, they gotta, you know, get the most out of him.
I agree. I think this was his best one. I thought this was a good line.
Silver sandwich.
A little light of
silver sandwich.
That wasn't even his line.
Jinora is in the library. Okay. So when she meets Wan Chih Tong,
you make the worst transitions.
Let's clear things. When I first watched it, I was like, oh, that's cool. Wan Chih Tong forgave Aang and stuff. But then it becomes clear upon second viewing that this is Wan Chih Tong setting her up. Yeah.
That was a bit too easy. Like, oh, you're with the Avatar. Fine, go. I don't care.
That was
anymore.
Really cool.
Jinora, you should know these things. Like,
at the same time, I don't know.
Why didn't Katara tell you?
I thought it was just bad storytelling, because that's what we've gotten.
See, I think it's bad storytelling because it doesn't make sense when you're watching it, because don't pick up on why he's doing that.
Yeah, but I mean, if you think about it.
Yeah, I was like, what the heck's going on? And then the second time I was they're trying to be clever.
Yeah, like, I didn't think of that after.
So they were too subtle, you think?
I don't know. I don't think they're too
subtle.
Well,
they weren't even subtle. There was nothing to pick up on.
Yeah, I just don't think the device worked because there's no concept of the betrayal yet.
I guess we should mention that Wan and Wan Chih Tong don't have anything to do with each other.
Yeah, Mel, Ali.
Mel is thrashing somewhere.
Yeah. You know what? Mel is not here, so.
That's why I said somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere. Okay.
I'm not taking this brunt.
Is this
brunt
the best part of the episode? We see dead Zay. Dead Professor.
Really?
They showed a dead body.
I was not expecting that, and I almost, fell off my bed.
Yeah,
I was hoping he was still around, just walking around.
I mean, he was around, he just was not alive.
I can't believe they showed his mummified body. Like,
why didn't the spirit foxes bring him food and stuff?
Because they were rude and
still, it's been like what?
They only listened to Wan Chih Tong.
I guess it could have been too long since then, but I don't
think it's been like 6 years.
Yeah,
they thought little boxes
like that?
I don't know.
From
the radio.
I was looking it up. Skeletons actually decompose within like a year, pretty much.
Okay. Well,
did you talk about Little Man in the Radio?
That was so fun.
Yes,
Dead Zay. So it's one great they bring Zay back. Professor Zay is widely regarded as the greatest minor character in the history of television. No, he's actually.
He is. Oh my god.
No, he's
just the worst person ever.
We love Professor Zay, and I kind of don't like that Jinora was like Professor Zay afterwards. I don't know,
I was like, why do you know? That is
obviously everything was written.
I understand that Jinora's read about it, but I don't know. The callback would have been better if they didn't explicitly state.
Dude, did Aang write a book?
Yeah, he must have, right? Actually, Sokka probably wrote a book.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Uncle Sokka.
And he probably had pictures of
Uncle
his own.
Uncle Sokka,
in there. It's like a picture book, and Sokka's really terrible paintings in his book.
I'll stop that.
And so then Jinora, best Jinora scene, which with the radio stuff. I should say that Wan Chih Tong's voiced by I looked it up just now, but I forgot his name. It's the same guy. And he's like, yes, I am well aware of the radio, which I thought was funny. And
of course
the Spirit Fox comic killed me.
What the fox? He said tiny men are in radios.
I was dead.
Yeah, but then Jinora's sciences. I like
is
this
that actually how radios work?
I like this whole concept of Wan Chih Tong knows everything because he's a spirit, but science clashes with spirits and it's new and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't think of it like that.
So, yeah. I just love Jinora's body language as she's telling this to him. Like, it's just such great animation and characterization. It was beautiful.
I actually thought Karen and Shipka did a really good job in the scene. I think this could have been easily not
butchered.
It wasn't the best writing here, but I thought it was she executed it very well.
She was just fantastic for the whole episode.
Yes,
she was very good. Yeah, and Sad Fox. That whole comic beat was that line was a little too long. That Wan Chih
I thought it was hilarious.
It was great, but it was like cut out a little bit of that line to get because we knew they showed the fox. And it was like still he had still to say an entire line before Fox could do it.
That's so funny.
I don't know. Maybe that was why it was funny though. Who knows? And this is this scene was another the time when I noticed that she looked exactly like Aang.
I think she's Aang's like, hair on the bunny thing. She looked like Aang the most.
A lot of times.
It just made me sad.
Wan Chi Tong's voice is, even though it's voiced by, I thought it was a little different.
They didn't use the like effect when like he got angry. Like he had like three different, like I don't know. It's like some computer thing that they do with like a voice.
On rewatching this episode, I got the impression that Wan Chi Tong seemed crazy.
I mean, he is.
That's not nice.
It's kind of like how
it's been stuck in the library for forever.
It's kind of like how Grey Delisle did Azula's voice in the finale compared to her voice before. I thought this was like a subtle change in Wan Chi Tong's voice.
I think you're right.
I mean, he has been like trapped down there forever.
He's
and
stuck
a half.
With stupid spirit foxes that think little men are in radio. Is that driving anybody crazy?
He has a little bit of like hay fever.
Wan Chi Tong killed the radio man.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, and if intentional, that was very well done. So then we go back to Baby Korra.
Yay.
Iroh says Pai
Shou. By the way, like, I thought it might have, like, I was like, the transformation of Baby Korra might have been better for me if they had just done it for like a minute and a half, and then gone back.
I was still trying to find the thing someone said about her.
The reason they do it is...
Yeah, no, they have good reasons, but I think it would have been a cooler
show. I want to find the thing, because it was a really good explanation,
we'll get there.
Just go looking for it.
Pai Shou was invented by the spirits, says Iroh, which doesn't really make any sense, but I guess, whatever.
Wait,
spirits need to have fun, too.
Did they reference that in Avatar? Because he talks about Pai Shou all the time,
never,
I feel like.
I don't think he ever said
that. They ever did that.
Okay.
Iroh says he chose to leave his body and go to the spirit world.
Which raises all sorts of questions.
A Buddhist perspective, this makes sense if Iroh reached enlightenment and chose to go to a Buddha world or something like that. But there is no really concept of enlightenment in Avatar. And we've never seen any indication that people...
Well, they did mention enlightenment, like Hugh got enlightenment.
Yeah.
That is true. They did say the word enlightenment in the swamp. But that's not this type of enlightenment.
One thing is, like, did he choose to do it, like, before he died, or was it, like, he died and it's, like, Dumbledore?
I'm
guessing he got the option to do it when he, like, did whatever he did.
Like, where's the train station? Like, let me know what's going on.
I'm getting some negative, really,
this
connotations.
Harry Potter.
What do you mean?
Like suicide connotations?
Yeah.
No,
I can see that.
I don't think so.
No, that's, why?
In Buddhism, if you, like, there's a lot of stuff, but when you die, there's, like, a period, and you have to, like, face your inner self and stuff, and I'm taking Tibetan Buddhism right now, and you can reach enlightenment during this period, but if you
so,
don't,
like,
then you
Egyptian
get...
stuff, like, your soul is being weighed and stuff, like, that kind of junk?
No, it's like, you're facing yourself, you're not, like, facing trial, but this is another period where you can, reach enlightenment. And if not, which most people don't, you go back, you reincarnate. It could have done that. Like, it would probably, it's like after he died, probably. But that's just one of the ways, you know. There's also stuff like you can, different philosophies, you can reach sudden enlightenment. But yeah, he also could have been enlightened before he died. So I guess that does make sense with the swamp, but whatever.
Well, I'm curious how many times he went to the spirit world before he decided, I want to go here.
We got no indication that he went again, right?
Yeah, that's my thing. I'm just curious, though, like, how long was he? I mean, I just feel like you wouldn't... I feel like, for Iroh, like, he wouldn't necessarily go once and be like, yeah, I'm gonna stay here. Does that make sense?
Like, I
was
know.
A bit
Maybe.
More thoughtful. I don't know.
I'm wondering if he's the only human there.
Yeah, that was another thing.
The other point I want to make was that we've seen avatars in the spirit world.
When I say human, I mean not Avatar human.
I know, but what's the difference? Why does it make sense for like Roku to appear in the spirit world? Because Roku,
well, they're an intricate part. They're the bridge that
kind
of makes
is
sense.
Roku is
Rava.
Rava is Korra, so it's not like Roku can live in the spirit world. So
actually,
that,
I think now that I
like
think about it, Roku might not have been in the spirit world. He just came out of Aang.
Okay, that's possible too.
Like a projection thing, like when they come and talk to them.
Just like what happened on the back of the Lion Turtle.
Interesting. Okay.
Oh,
yeah, that's possible.
Maybe.
But anyway, that's it. I think it was fine. It was fine, but it wasn't like amazing. This explanation, and I guess it's cool that Iroh's in the
Spirit World. I liked it. I mean, it's again like what we were saying before. I don't want it to be explained too much to the point where it's like annoying that we know everything.
Oh, this
about
is
it.
Lame.
Yeah, I agree. And then there's sad baby Korra, and then she like summons the storm that we saw in the trailer.
And then the cutest line ever.
I forgot it already.
I don't know. I have an Iroh line here. I'll say that. In the spirit world, your emotions become your reality, especially for the Avatar. What do you think of this whole concept of emotions, like, affecting everything?
Okay, the first time I was like, okay, like, the concept makes sense, but the line doesn't. Like, I understand the idea behind it, but the way he says it does not make sense.
Yeah.
Like, your emotions become reality. That doesn't make any sense. Now, I understand the idea behind it, but the line itself is gibberish.
It's almost like superpowering humans. Like, humans have the power to change the whole everything in the spirit world.
That's interesting. Like, super.
Well, it's like the whole optimism, pessimism, which I really feel like was the whole point of the episode. So it's like giving that, like, a life in the spirit world, which makes sense, but I don't know. Like, the line just didn't make any sense, but I do appreciate the concept behind it.
Okay, Sam?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, what do you have to say?
I don't know. What are we talking about?
You got cut off.
Never mind.
Okay. Emotions in the spirit world.
Those are things. Okay. I didn't really like... I feel like they're making stuff up as they go along.
Okay, that's what you're going to say.
It didn't make me happy that they just like,
They do... I think they have permission to constantly change the rules of the spirit world. Yeah. Because they never really establish them, so...
Yeah, I just don't like that one. That one just seems really dumb.
I agree this is not... This is... It's we'll see how this relates later with dark... How does this... let's talk about it now. How does this relate to dark spirits? Is the reason Furryfoot and is the reason Korra's doggy friends at the end change because the Jinora and Korra get scared or because they're being influenced by Unalaq?
I feel like it's maybe
I think
it's what Jeff said. Was it Jeff or was Ali's about the human part? How it's like the humans influence the spirit world. So I could see it being that.
Right.
I definitely thought it was portrayed as Unalaq, but I think it's an interesting interpretation to think about. Unalaq's there, so Jinora gets scared, so then Furryfoot transforms. Like, I think that's another interesting
So, like, yielding influence to Unalaq?
Just like, if one bad person comes in...
No, it's not the bad... what I'm saying is that it's not the bad person. Mm-hmm. It's Jinora's scared because Unalaq is there, and her negative emotions are affecting
Okay,
I think that's
I think it... I think it might be sense. Sort of a bit of both. Like,
it could be both, yeah.
If it's that way, I like what they're doing with it. If it's just Unalaq, then it's kind of lame.
Well, I think it goes into energy in general. When it starts, like, the aura around a person, like, when it's negative, like, being scared and stuff like that, and angry, that's negative, so that influences the spirits, because they're really, like, attuned to that, I guess.
They never explicitly say it, right? So
yeah.
It's up to interpretation.
Definitely,
so then, Iroh's like, stay positive,
which I thought that was an odd thing, that they're focusing on being positive as opposed to being neutral. Because the whole time they've been like, you gotta be calm, you gotta be neutral. Now they're like, you have to be positive.
Yeah,
like,
that's definitely really in contrast to like Ko. And,
But being being positive doesn't really have to do with being neutral or...
No, that's what I'm talking about. It's a complete change. I think it is, like, there is,
different.
Like, you can be negative, you can be positive, you can be in the middle. I took it as. Like,
yeah, but it's not really neutral.
It's also
but
like
she's picking a side.
It's like the 200 something djinns or something they mentioned in Return to Amash.
Oh yeah, okay, like yeah.
So many stuff right there. And then he's like, help this dragon bird thing. I guess that's what that animal is, because it becomes like, it seems like it becomes
a Pokemon, seriously.
Not
yeah.
It calls it a dragon bird, but it's definitely
what's the
a phoenix.
What's the golden legendary from the second generation?
Ho-Oh.
Is that what it's called? Okay. Anyway,
I know my Pokemon. Don't laugh at me.
Yeah, he was in the anime.
Anyway, yeah.
This
God. One, like,
game.
I was really happy with this lesson.
Too.
Yes, Jeff?
They put in this, like, the lesson for kids in this, like, Journey Up the Mountain was so beautiful. It's like, people can be negative all around you, but if you have light inside you, you can see the light in them, and by helping them, you can help yourself.
It did appear for me for a second when Korra, like all this stuff with Korra as a baby, getting lectured on stuff by Iroh, it's like, oh, this, for a second it felt like a kid's show, and I don't want it to feel like a kid's
show.
But
I mean,
it's just like it has greater meaning for Korra.
It's not even really just for kids. I mean, I thought it was a good lesson for me.
I agree. It's just I think Korra being so young.
It's not like a non-kids show can't teach us anything.
Agreed.
I think it's kind of like this new show called Steven Universe on Cartoon Network.
Is that by the Adventure Time?
Rebecca Sugar. Yeah.
It's
like this kid show, but like it has like really kid like morals and values, but it makes me feel stuff.
I need to watch that, Rebecca Sugar.
It makes me feel really happy.
Cool.
Friendship,
yay. But it was just for a second that I thought this, then it went away. Okay, thank you.
I really appreciated it too, Jeff.
Okay, so back to Janora. Okay. She's looking for the portals.
Sam, you didn't get my reference.
I check your reference.
Mr. Fox helps, and then...
I'm like, why didn't they ask her at first?
Yeah, just...
Exactly.
I don't know. Yeah. I could see Janora wanting to find it.
Janora is totally Hermione.
Janora's like, I know libraries. I can do this, right?
And then she just gave up.
There is no card catalog here.
Yeah.
It's like when, people at, retail stores, come up to you and say, hey, do you need help with something? And you're like, no, I'll find it by myself.
And then 10 minutes later, you're just frustrated.
And then you're like,
somewhere.
Yeah, actually, no, help me, please.
Anyway. I'm lost.
Yeah. As long as the Tree of Time is, I don't know if they called it that in the beginnings. Maybe
they did not.
They did not. Okay, so that's a new name. And then as long as the portals are closed during harmonic convergence, Batu is still imprisoned. So I don't know if they explicitly stated that.
Oh, this is more Hermione either. Because when she's talking about Deathly Hallows, this entire scene, I'm just like, Janora is Hermione. This is ridiculous.
Janora is.
Oh God,
Hermione,
wait,
okay?
Yeah, that's true.
And then
it was ridiculous.
Energy is amplified if the portals are open. So now we're starting to make sense of the whole matter.
Still making thing. Stuff up, whatever.
Yeah, but whatever.
I like how they use the device though. The whole reading the story.
That it was reminiscent of the story in Cave of Two Lovers.
Yeah.
But it, obviously not really a complete story, but it's just that same, not even the animation style, but just the device, I guess.
I like that they don't use it a lot, but it is nice when they do use it.
Yeah, it's very good. Then Unalaq comes up and Wanchi Tong's he's a friend to the spirits. And Janora's why are you helping him?
Why is Unalaq so creepy?
Yeah.
He's
purple.
He's too, yes, okay.
Purple?
He's purple. I totally get what you're saying, Jeff. He's purple. I get it.
What do you think of this scene? How'd you like how Janora reacted? What do you think of Wan Chi Tong working with the spirits? It's like once again, Wan Chi Tong is succumbing to the bad guy, right?
I
like the development.
Well, so it happened with Zhao.
He who knows 10,000 things can't, learn from his mistakes.
He only knows
10,000
things.
Yeah. He knows the same 10,000 things.
Really, 10,000 things, not that many things. You don't need to think about it.
I'm wondering, what does Unalaq know that the book doesn't?
Yeah. Is he just making things up?
The book said that, death will come to everything, whatever, and then Unalaq's don't believe everything you've read, and maybe he's just being lied to.
So I think it's something to do with him being overconfident, thinking he can change something.
There's a lot
of it. I think he's being lied to, and he's being stupid.
There's a lot of ambiguous stuff here that I think is okay because we're not at the end yet. So we don't need to have why Unalaq's acting this. Because Unalaq is very evil here. And it doesn't come across well because we don't know his motivations and stuff. Well, we do know his motivation, we just don't know the reason behind that.
I was so creeped out by the research line.
What do you mean?
Oh, yeah, first-hand research,
I was like, you're so creepy, oh my god.
I need
that was really unnecessary.
I thought the line, don't believe everything you read line, wasn't... I think Janora said the line, the word everything in the line before it. I don't know, I thought they could have varied things.
No, where does he get the guff, call Tenzin and a bad dad?
Yeah, okay.
Wait, did he say that in this line?
Yeah, he said that there.
He was what kind of father is he? But then Janora was like, you! And I was
You know what? You almost let your child die.
That being said, did Janora ever meet... Janora, they were at the Spirit Festival, so they Destin Escobar.
I think it was just a knee-jerk reaction. I think it would have meant more if Janora had known all the things that had happened, because it would have been in your face, Unalaq, but it just meant stuff for us.
Yeah. And then, back to Korra. Many Iroh wisdom things are said a bunch in a row. And none of them are that. Well, I don't know. None of them.
That should be a Tumblr.
Many Iroh wisdom things.
Someone to go get that. I don't feel like doing that.
No, thank you.
Forget it.
We've made too many Tumblrs.
We can have the Dongbu Feng Tumblr network.
Yeah, that's a Tumblr empire. Yeah.
Tumblr Empire.
Visit, Iroh says, visit again in this life or the next, which I thought
yeah,
was
yeah, I love cool. it.
Yeah, I love that line.
And then when we bend
wait,
space.
Wait, do avatars go to the spirit world when we die?
What?
Avatar, see, they're not, probably not. We were talking about that before. Like, avatars remain with Rava, right?
Because it's the whole, like...
Because they have to stay...
Yeah, they remain.
In the world.
It's Korra again. It's not like they can just go to the... It's not... Reincarnating doesn't mean you can be in two places at once, right? So you just... it means you're still the person you reincarnate to.
Yeah, I think we had this discussion at the Spirit World minicast, where we were all just really confused.
Yeah.
Life is weird.
Their rules aren't very clear. Anyway, end of Act... so then that's the end of Act 2. So now we go to...
Oh, wait a minute.
We begin
space bending.
I just thought of an alternate meaning for Iroh's thing, which you might have just said. I wasn't paying attention. It's like, maybe Korra comes while she's Korra or while she's the next avatar.
Mm. Yeah, that's what that means. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, that's what he's trying to say. So Korra wants to be friends with the doggies. And
those are like lion dogs.
They were terrifying.
Those were not dogs. Okay,
they look modeled very clearly modeled after dogs. After
are you blind?
They have like the faces of like Chinese tigers.
They were like jester dogs.
They acted just like dogs.
They act like dogs. Watched the episode.
They were panting and like tapping their legs.
They were very clearly dogs. Okay,
and they were terrifying in both forms.
No, I like them.
They were scary. I mean, I liked them the second time I watched it. But they were terrifying in both.
They were cute.
They're cuties, yeah. Then the dragon, they make this dragon bird phoenix. It's two of those three. It looks, see, I thought this was a phoenix, but
call it dragon bird. Iroh calls it a dragon bird.
Yeah, it seems like a phoenix. And they just, of course, they combine, and then
Korra
cheats and has two.
I have a theory about this.
Yeah, what's your?
I think. You know how the bird were like they were in pieces, like the four different hatchlings to become the phoenix, and then Korra is a baby. I feel like the phoenix represents light and enlightenment, I guess too. So I think this light spirit is connected to Korra, who is also Rava, who is the light order spirit. So I feel like there's a connection between the spirit of light and Korra. So which is why I feel like. Why she was
gonna make like a four nations?
Read what parallel. I wrote in chat.
If,
I just feel like they're connected, which is why we had this whole weird journey because the phoenix wasn't complete and Korra wasn't complete. Like I just feel like they're I don't necessarily mean like obviously they're plot devices, but like I feel like they're connected because Korra is the bridge and light, and this phoenix is literally light. Like I feel like there's some sort of connection.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I didn't really think of that.
If Brit was on, we can make a parallel to Shazam. From Injustice.
Yeah, there we go.
I guess we'll talk about, of course, I don't know, the second animal companion, further thoughts, it's a dragon.
You know what?
Wait, Naga
has to, like, sniff her so much when she gets home. Like, when you cheat on your animals,
that's when they just get so jealous. That's why I was upset about the sky bison, and I'm also upset that I don't have one, but that's why, like, the main reason I was sad.
Yeah, like, Naga's gonna be so sad. Like,
I understand that feel, because I have two dogs. Yeah, my friends have dogs, and when I come home, they don't leave me alone, and I feel like I cheated on them.
What if Naga just adopts Bolin and is like, bye, Korra?
Yeah, Naga loves
Bolin. Anyway, so then we have the returning theme from... This is the returning theme I was talking about earlier, the music theme. And it's like... you know. And
that was beautiful.
Thank you. They go.
Wow. Yeah.
She goes off on Mrs. Dragon thing.
Mrs. Dragon.
And they find Vatu. And Vatu's always so braggy. Like he's always like.
I was expecting him to be like, "See you at the end of the world." Yeah. Like I was so expecting that line. It was ridiculous.
So I'm so happy he didn't say that again.
I actually really like Vatu. Like,
why?
He's pretty great.
Everything
he's just fun.
Great. Yeah.
He's like.
He's so overdramatic.
He is very overdramatic. He's pretty good.
Lame.
And his voice is so like boisterous. He's like,
At the end when Korra like escapes, Unalaq's like, crap. And then and like Vatu's like, this will be the end, Rava.
Like, he's the melodramatic villain without like acting like a melodramatic villain, and it's awesome.
It's really he's not acting.
And I think Jonathan Adams, I think is the voice actor's name. I don't know. I think he does a really good job.
The president?
No, I don't know. Anyway.
President of what?
Something like that.
Imagine if it was the president.
Janora is taken as a hostage with weird Soul bending. So I want to call this soul bending.
Yeah, yeah, soul bending. I feel like that's
So what are the consequences? So what are the consequences of the blue, the purple light reaching the top?
Okay, I think my theory is like in these flashbacks to the Northern Water Tribe when he does this to spirits, they just go all dazed and wander off. So I think it would sort of turn her into a zombie.
Interesting.
Totally docile zombie that does whatever he wants.
Billy, don't understand why. Like, water's becoming so annoyingly OP and, like, without explanation.
Yep.
I feel it's, like, corrupting her soul, which I feel like it's significant that they're actually calling them souls. Like, I don't think we've had that before.
Souls, not even spirits. It's souls.
You know what?
Which
the,
is weird.
You know what this reminds me of? The thing going up to the head was the rock candy in 105.
Yes. Oh, yes. I had that thought too.
Anyway, I don't know. This was kind of a dumb. Do you think so, Jeff? You think this is the same thing that's used on the spirits?
Yeah, it looks the same, and it's overpowered and dumb.
It's overpowered. Opie, yeah.
I don't know.
Is it a different color? Isn't it purple?
Yeah, it is a different color. Yeah. Like, it's purple. We haven't seen purple.
Well, I think it's different for people and spirits, like, because they're not the same thing.
Is it a different technique, or is it the same technique?
That's we don't know, because they're not explaining anything, because they're dumb.
And they did it three times, and it's like, I feel like we deserve some explanation.
I'm pretty sure.
Okay, they did it twice, but
somehow Cora learned it. Like, when did she learn it? How does she know how to do that?
Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't bother me too much. It did somewhere in the beginning, right?
I mean, people have been complaining about how we haven't seen her learn it, but I mean, we don't have to see her learn every single thing. We didn't see her learn earthbending.
But it was kind of...
You know how you learn it, but how do you learn it? Or firebending. She just didn't do it.
I understand why we didn't have to see her learn the elements, because we spent an entire TV show watching Aang learn the elements. So I'm okay that we started Korra off with the spiritual journey, but I feel like as part of her spiritual journey is this whole I'm gonna tame the spirits nonsense. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we should have at least seen a little bit of that.
I think that's valid.
Also,
yes.
Why didn't she go into the Avatar state when she was turning purple?
Who?
It's a good question.
Korra. No,
Jinora, obviously.
Why Jinora? Yeah, Jinora.
Can you go into the Avatar state in the spirit world? Have we seen that?
Yeah, she did.
Yeah, she did when she did her thing.
Hey, but she's not in the spirit world at that moment. She's in both worlds.
Yeah, but it's the same place.
Because she's touching the portal.
Oh, yeah.
Spirit world in our world, so we don't know.
Life is so complicated.
So
there's no bending.
I'm sure they were not thinking of that at all.
Aang never went into the spirit world. He
never went into the spirit world when he was in the spirit world, right?
Aang never went into the Avatar state in the spirit
I think this is part of why Unalaq, when he comes from the portal into the spirit world, because they still have that touch of the real world. That's why they can bend.
So the question is, if Korra went through the portal, would she be able to go in the spirit world? To the Avatar.
Oh my god, you are just messing everything up.
Oh my god.
Well, it has to do with her bending, I feel like. Yes.
Anyway, yes, interesting. I don't know if it does have to do
with
Would she have all the elements? You know, we just don't know.
She'd only have two out of four.
Well,
she gets to pick her two elements. That's the deal here.
It's like a video game screen at that moment.
Oh
she like pick one.
And then, okay, so then she makes a very quick decision to open the portal.
Dumb.
Well, what else are you gonna do? She has no.
I don't know.
The scene does a good job of making the viewer feel very helpless.
Right?
Yo, hold on. Can we back it up for like 2 seconds?
No.
Wait, be quiet.
Yes.
When she goes to like the portal that's open and she's about to like touch it, and then Vatu's like, "So, Rava," and then she turns around and then like it pans to her going there.
Yes,
like she should have just ignored him and closed it.
Why aren't we talking about the space spending nonsense where they're not even moving and it's like
that
boom?
Too, yeah.
Yeah. So, they did that. Yeah. Well, I get the impression that it's like it doesn't matter exactly where you are in this. In this little room thing,
I call it space bending. It's like Albert Einstein's like nonsense.
You just transfer randomly.
Well, it's kind of like how the North and South Pole, like how they touch. Like I feel like that has to do with how the spirit world is affixed to the normal world.
Maybe.
Like because the poles.
Oh, maybe.
I don't know.
It's like a war. Oh, it's just like how they theorize wormholes work.
Yes, exactly.
You bend space time to so two distant points are right next to each other.
Maybe it's
that's
like
what I was getting at. Thank you, Jeff.
I don't think that's what they're like.
They're
in subspace.
Box.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah, Schrodinger's cat.
Okay. Anyway, there's the bending. Oh, I don't know what it. The helpless. Korra makes a quick decision, which I think is part of her arc at the end. She doesn't get upset. Oh. She's calm. And she's like, this is obviously the only option.
But she only had, like, 2 seconds because Unalaq's a jerk.
Like, she took, like, 2 seconds to decide. Like, it wasn't like, no, I'll do it.
But then I understand, though, because, like, and I was really surprised by how quickly Unalaq, like, changed, like, at the end. Like, I wasn't expecting him to be so quickly to just be evil and be like, nope.
Word, yeah.
Like, I really wasn't expecting that. And I was really, this episode just shocked me time and time again, which
how
I
do,
think
is
really
what
so
think of,
so nice.
What did you think of Unalaq in this episode as a villain?
Well, I could
bad words say he's predictable,
words
like,
that I shouldn't say on here, so I'm just gonna not say anything.
Yeah.
Not how do you like him as a person? How do you like him as a villain?
Definitely effective.
All he's missing is like some lightning in the background and like a twirly mustache.
I don't know. I think he's very uninteresting.
Twirly mustache.
I think we don't. His motivations are we know he's evil. He's just
We know who's pulling his strings. He's not impressive.
He's not. It's not that he's not even impressive. Oh. I've just never seen him as interesting. There's just nothing captivating about
him.
He's
just Kor's creepy uncle.
Yeah,
I just want to know if he's being like played by Vatu and like Vatu's like lying to him, or he actually wants to let the dark spirit out.
Well, we'll probably find that out.
Like, what do you think it is?
Insane.
So, like, is my point.
Yeah,
like,
anyway, then question. I don't know. I don't really. The thing is that I don't care. I don't really care because I don't care about Unalaq right
now.
John,
why are you me? Stop that.
My point is that they haven't done a good job establishing Unalaq as an interesting villain. Jarek, on the other hand, has multiple facets to him. He's super interesting.
We don't know anything about him either, though.
Unalaq's just.
And he's not. It seems like he's not going to come back in time to do anything interesting.
Jarek. Or Unalaq.
Oh. Varric.
Yeah, well, obviously he'll do something, but it's...
Well, no, not this season. He's, like, done, probably.
No, he's not done. They're going back to Republic City next episode.
Oh, yeah, never mind.
Yeah, so we'll see some type of conclusion there.
Well, maybe not a conclusion, but more
No, they're going to conclude his arc. Like, you don't just go through the season. Yeah, they don't... Well, I mean, they could bring him back again,
so.
But they have to conclude this whole he's...
I don't think so.
You are incorrect.
Okay.
I think this goes back to how we're like, there's all this stuff going on. We have no idea how they're concluding because there's so much stuff.
I mean,
there's only four episodes.
We have the descriptions. You can tell what's going to happen, right?
Yeah, but still.
Two more weeks.
Yeah, anyway, Dragon Phoenix saves Korra. Well, I don't know why is that one unaffected by all the negatives?
Because
it's so funny when he knocks. Oh my god, I was
because
dying.
Because she saved him and brought him and made, like, evolved him like a Pokemon.
They're connected. Evolved, sure. I told you, they're connected.
There's dragon.
Yeah,
dragons! Oh my god, it's Khaleesi. Wait, where's Mel?
Yes.
She's new Khaleesi.
No, thank you.
Can we talk about how funny it was that it just, like, casually just flicks him around and just leaves?
Yeah. I don't know, why doesn't the dragon know to save Jinora, too? That's what I thought she was going to do.
No, dragons, the mother of dragons, I'm telling you.
You got to save Jinora.
Why obviously. Is the dragon so huge? Have you noticed that it's just ridiculously large?
Yes.
It's like, pretty, it's uses its little, tiny little bit of its town, it's like, boom, and Unalaq's, like, the size of, like, I don't even know, and it's ridiculous.
Okay, and then we get this, and then, Korra wakes up somehow. I don't know how she wakes up, but she does, and...
So if you pass out in the spirit world, you wake up elsewhere.
It's like Avatar, the movie.
Is that how it works?
Which
so if you go, like, on a drunken rampage in the spirit world, you pass out,
no,
you
I just
want to
make die in the spirit world, die in real life jokes. Like that,
yes.
No, but anyway, yeah.
Wow, you are morbid.
Tenzin's upset.
No, that's the thing. Die somewhere, die in real life.
Yeah, like that.
It's a thing somewhere.
It's a thing.
Like,
yeah.
Sort
like
of
a trope.
Online.
Yeah, it's a trope, yeah. Anyway, so then we see Tenzin is sad and Korra's
Dylan,
sad.
Dylan, it's Sword Art
the
Online.
Most painful line.
I don't like how Korra takes the blame, you know?
Yeah, me neither. Yeah, like, it wasn't her fault.
But Tenzin, it's his daughter. Like, really, we can't really blame him.
Blame.
No, but, like, she was more blaming herself. She's like, I'm really, really sorry.
Yeah,
like I...
don't be sorry, Korra. Be like, that Unalaq.
Like,
yeah,
like
yeah.
We done that's messed up.
Maybe this is part of her character. She's finally taking responsibility because before she didn't really take responsibility.
Oh, that's true.
Okay,
I actually didn't see much.
But the way he delivered that line.
Okay, let's talk about Korra's.
Broke my heart.
Yeah, that was sad. Okay, Korra's development. This is one of the big things we need to hit on.
That was pretty much the whole entire episode. Read the thing I wrote.
Okay, so let's read Ali's thing, then I'll read some posts on the forums. Quote, for real though, baby Korra was such a good plot device, showing us how insecure and inexperienced and afraid she was. Iroh taught her how to deal with the spirit world, and she grew as a person and a character on her own without him holding her hand the whole way. The decision she made was because she was under pressure and for the sake of Jinora's life. It wasn't because she was deceived by Onon or even thought it was the right thing to do. I think I disagree that Iroh wasn't holding her hand. I think Iroh...
Well, he gave her all she needed and she went off. Like, no, he told her everything she needed and she was like, all she had to do was, like, be happy. Like,
yeah,
that's it.
Like, just
she had one job.
Iroh's a life coach, dude.
Yeah.
He's a guidance counselor.
We're talking about baby Korra as
oh my god, Iroh is the guidance counselor.
As a device for Korra.
I didn't realize that.
So here's my take. Like, I think that baby Korra developed for sure, but as soon as she turned back, I didn't see adult Korra do anything different than what she would have done before.
I have a theory about that. I feel like this is the key to how we're going to defeat Vatu later, is because Korra, she's the spirit of light. That's what Rav is, and she has to discover this, and she's going to like save the world. This is how it's going to work.
It's going to be another like Deus Ex Machina.
Yes.
The only way Korra can defeat Unalaq is turning into baby Korra. That's what you're
saying. Oh my god.
No, I'm just talking about she's going to like, it's going to be like insane avatar state, and I'm trying to think of a good picture like idea for how this will look, but it's like this crazy light nonsense.
Little baby Korra avatar state.
Like, it's the whole innocence of the child, like, being, like, there's only two ways to go, and, like, the whole, and then Korra, she just has to be what she is. She is Rava. She has to be light.
Let's read Toon Gala on the forums on this. I'm starting to see the purpose of Korra's flipping out. She was always someone who had trouble with her own fear, and she hid that by being tough and aggressive. And having her turn back into a little kid, that little girl she felt like inside was just perfect. She needed to return to a childlike state to be open, to learn how to face her fear. Dare I say she had character development? It's too early to say if it'll stick. What do you guys think of that?
No, I do agree about it. Oh, okay, everybody.
Oh my
god. Thinking about it, I feel like her turning into a child was kind of too transparent. Like, it was too, like, obvious. Like, of course, you know, she feels like a little kid inside. Has to turn into a little kid so that we get the point.
Gizmo on the forum says, I mean, turning Korra into a child was just so manipulative. Of course her actions seem much cuter and more understandable as a kid, but if she acted that way as a 17-year-old, it'd have a completely different feel, you know?
Yeah, what do you think of that? That's true, I guess. But, I mean, maybe it's just saying that, like, she still is a kid. Like, by, like, making her a kid.
I feel like the visual was too much. Like, I feel like they could have done... You know what I mean? Like, the visual was just kind of like, weird.
I still don't understand what mechanism it was.
Yeah, I don't understand. That's why I thought about the whole connection thing, but that's really my only explanation I can think of is the whole connection to the baby bird and that. But it doesn't make any sense.
I have a lot of emotions on this. Korra portraying females as children, I think, is something that happens a lot, or just showing them as younger. And I think it's doing a few things. One of them is it elicits more inherent sympathy, showing younger Korra as opposed to current Korra.
Which is what Gizmo was getting at.
Which I think says something, yeah, I agree, but this says something about our perceptions of females. We find younger ones and more inherently sympathetic, and older ones not as much so. And they're using that here, which I don't like.
At the
same time, I also think that most of this episode is very sympathetic towards our two main characters, and by turning Korra younger, we both have two younger females here, and it's another case of we're seeing the predicaments of younger females as opposed to older females, and it's like we see Korra acting unsympathetically all season, and her development is turning younger.
Let's make her adorable so we like her again.
We make her adorable so we like again. Is that how we think females should act? Like, younger? I don't, it's not what they're saying, but
I think
that's like one of the many emotions that I'm feeling when they're doing that. And I don't like it as much. I do feel more sympathy for baby Korra, but that's not a good thing, I don't think.
It was just a strange plot device. Like, I mean, I understand where they're coming from, and, like, I feel like they could have done it, they could have achieved the same effect and not even had to change any of the lines without doing, you know what I mean? Like, it was just weird.
I think this was probably a miscalculation, I think is my overall feeling on this.
Well, the first time it happened, I thought it was ridiculous. Like, I'm like, am I really watching an episode of Korra and this is happening? Like, I don't know if it's supposed to be more acceptable because they're in the spirit world and this kind of stuff just happens all the time because this is the Alice in Wonderland episode, but, like, it really didn't make any sense.
I think this is supposed to be Korra's big development episode, and I love how it's framed through a trip to the spirit world. But I think making Korra, turning Korra into younger Korra for all but the last act of this, delegitimizes the growth she goes through. I don't think we associate it with her And I also think it would have been more effective if we saw the Korra we'd seen before undergoing these getting this advice from Iroh and trying to take it into account with her actions. Like Jeff says, once she turns back into older Korra, we don't see her use this as much. The big scene of her developing is when she's a baby and she's helping these dragons and stuff, and she's like, I have to stay positive.
They don't give her a chance.
I think it would have been more effective if she was older Korra during that scene.
I think they were relying too much on the symbolism behind what they were doing. Kind of like how they do the whole, like, hey, we're going to do all this stuff, and we know what we're doing, but they don't, and that's okay, because we know what we're doing, and we're just going to show this episode. Because we talk about that a lot with Korra, like, they do all this stuff, and we're like, this doesn't make any sense, but Mike and Brian know, because they're the creators. I think this
was definitely, regardless of the mechanism behind her turning younger, I don't really think that's relevant. I think this is Mike and Tim, and also Josh, probably making a decision to do this to try to develop her, and I don't think it's awful. Like, there's nothing in this episode that's awful. I just think this is a little misguided. Agreed.
Well, I just don't know where. I don't know where ever. Like, I mean, I kind of just from what you've said, I'm just not sure where it would have worked. Like, if it ever would have worked, doing something similar to this.
Okay.
Because you're talking about it being misguided, like. That seems more like this might have worked if we had tried a little bit differently.
They shouldn't have done the specific device. Like, they should not have turned Korra younger, is what I'm saying.
I agree.
Sam, Allie, thoughts?
On what?
No.
On what? Okay, I'm ignoring you. Next.
Whoa!
Janora, you obviously weren't paying attention. Janora,
I was paying attention.
I said I liked it before, and you just weren't listening.
One of the other things that I thought was a little iffy about this was how we see Janora actually acquiring a character throughout the entire episode. And what I mean is that she says more than the 10 lines she says before. Thank you. Sam says she was eating a Pop-Tart. Janora, but then at the end, she is a hostage. She is turned into this plot device. Do you agree that I say Janora was turned into a plot device in the third act?
No.
Not more so than, like, any of the other characters in the original show were used this way.
It's not like she was turned into a plot device, it's just that, like, I don't know.
Dylan, you've already made this parallel, like, in, with the rock candy, when Sokka and Korra and Katara were
I think Katara was a plot device in that episode, Frank.
Okay, see, that's what I was getting at. The whole, like, they use Katara and Sokka all the time in Avatar for this, but I don't really see them. Their only purpose isn't to be a plot device.
Yeah, and also with that episode, that was for the whole way through, it was that way. Like, with Janora, it was just for the end. So I don't think she was.
I think there's a few differences here. One of which, Janora isn't a major character.
Okay, fair enough.
I think it's important to keep
turning into one now.
I agree, but I think the end of this delegitimizes that because.
But what else would they have done?
Well, they could have just not turned the story that way. I don't know. Like, they don't have to. They very much construct the story.
I mean, it makes it more interesting and upsetting. So
certainly, it makes it more upsetting. But now we have missing Janora instead of Janora joining Korra's adventures. Janora's probably going to stay missing until the finale, and then she'll be rescued at the end. It's like,
or maybe she'll rescue herself.
Well, I feel like the build up to Janora finally having a character made this much more meaningful, and I feel like less of a plot device because we actually care about Janora more than we did before. Like, look, she's a person now.
I agree. It was definitely successful because of the first two acts of this episode.
I don't think they're demoting her because she didn't really have a place to begin with.
Well, I think she established a place in this episode. As a huge Janora fan, I loved where they went with her the first two acts, and then I don't like her being used as a hostage and then disappearing. I don't think that's good for her character overall.
Okay, I completely agree. Now I see. This is kind of like what they're doing with Lynn. Like, I get it now. Okay.
Yeah, it's like keep the momentum going with Lynn. Don't turn her into this background character that's just used as a plot device in the season, right?
I don't think it's like going to that extreme. Like, I really don't think they're making her just a plot device. Like,
Janora or Lynn?
Janora. Okay. Like, with her, I mean, like, it's just.
It definitely remains.
I'm trying to think what else could they do to, like, make it, like.
You have to understand that, like, you guys are thinking of it in terms of the plot of this episode. They could have just structured it entirely differently.
Yeah, but
they
didn't
need to have this concept of Janora's hostage. They could have just rewritten the entire, like, you don't.
But
you,
how?
When they set out to make this episode, they're going to be like, okay, we're going to get from here to here, and then Janora's going to be taken hostage here, and then that's going to be how we get Korra to open the portal here because we need it to happen. So it's you may be right that they're working backwards. Mike says, okay, Tim, at the end of this episode, Cora has to open the portal. So Tim's like, how does that happen? Well, she has to be forced to do it. How does she force to do it? Okay, her bonding with Jenora, and then we're going to use that, and she's me taking hostage. So that's probably how it was worked backwards to that. I do think this episode suffers a little bit from the constraints of where it needs to be at the end. This episode clearly is, the portal needs to be open at the end, so we need to have this jam-packed third
act. We have to have leverage on Cora to make her do it.
Yeah, so which is the reason that Jenora is taken hostage, which is the reason that they rush through Unalaq. Unalaq needs to be super evil here without knowing his motivations.
What would have been different if she, let's say Tenzin had actually taken her, like, how would that have changed it? Like, I don't necessarily think they just did it because it's Jenora.
I just think the entire, like, hostage-taking thing, right?
Well, like, it's really annoying, and it's really overused.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, that I was think definitely, that trope, like,
super, it is overused, but...
That trope, it's just, it's emotionally exhausting and frustrating, I would say.
And it's overly used in the Avatar universe.
In Avatar
like,
as well, I agree with that.
All the time, and it's like, really...
But not just in Avatar, it's like in every series
I agree
ever.
It's one of the most common tropes, but Avatar has...
Are
Avatar
we talking...
talking
what trope?
I'm trying. What else have they used it in other than
Rock Candy?
Rock Candy.
When that general's trying to make Aang go into the Avatar state, the Earth King.
Katara. Yeah, but I'm trying to think of anyone else.
Also,
I'm trying to think of like boys.
They just that's the thing. They repeatedly use the love interest female as for sympathy.
I think the similar trope of damsel in distress.
I agree.
Yeah, there's this really good video series that Anita Sarkeesian does, Feminist Frequency. She was doing tropes versus women, and she made like all these videos about the damsel in distress trope. And she makes some pretty good points, like how it's just a character that doesn't really mean that much. Like, you don't really get her personality, which that was pretty much Jenora before this episode.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's just so overused. Like, so many people use that trope, and just stop doing that.
It was just frustrating because Jenora was starting not to just be...
Yeah,
she wasn't in distress.
She was
before,
demoted.
She was just a damsel, right? And then you see her start to become, like, a legitimate character with legitimate... Like, we read online that Jenora is this bookworm and that she studies the past journeys and stuff, and we see that slightly in the first episode, but we never really see it after that other than her reading a book at the dinner table. And then,
but then
we...
she manages to get captured the way her grandmother got captured. So,
so that's good.
Good job, Jenora.
But the point is that we actually start to see her, like, we actually start to see what we've been reading, like, in the plot, the episode things, and then she just is used as damsel in distress. It's frustrating. I think they backed themselves into a corner because of how they're structuring this season, I would say. They know their harmonic convergence spoilers has to go badly, so this portal has to be open. And you can also tell that the harmonic convergence is going to go badly because it's not the final episode of the season, right? Like, by making it third to last, you know it's not going to work out.
Also, that title of the last episode.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's just like, I don't think how Tim wrote Jenora as a hostage was particularly awful, but I think the structure maybe could have been changed a little bit.
We're just tired of it. It's just like, really?
Yeah.
Do we have to do this again?
So I think we've been talking about how the third act was handled. I think I just hit on that a little bit. But do you think it went too fast, the third act? Too much plot?
Yes. Too fast because it was all crazy stuff. Like,
well, it was like, feels, what?
And then
it ended.
Bad stuff that shouldn't have happened at all.
I thought this episode was similarly paced to some earlier ones, but I thought, the third act, but also the first act, but I thought this was successful in portraying large amounts of plots in a rapid amount of time. I thought
it's not like it was done poorly. It's just that like it went too fast, and I was like, what?
Like I said,
it's definitely more bearable.
I've repeatedly said this, but I think structural problems are here. I think Tim actually executed this third act very well. Like, I think considering how much they packed into maybe 5 minutes at the end, it was very effective. Agree? Disagree?
Yes,
I agree.
Okay. Do you think the random Avatar cameos of Wan Chitong and Iroh are manipulating us based on our past sympathies
probably.
To Avatar?
Yeah,
or do you
definitely.
Think, or do you think that they're legitimate plot devices that can use?
I feel like they're both. Mm-hmm. Maybe not Iroh as much as Wan Chitong, but both.
I think if Wan Chitong comes back, then that would be great. But if he doesn't come back, then it might seem that way.
I feel like Wan Chitong is like less playing to our sympathies.
Yeah,
Iroh is just like,
Yeah, I think Guan Xitong maybe makes sense as a plot device here. Like, it makes sense to bring him back. He's not the one that you want to bring back, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. The library was a good episode, but, you know, it's not the one that's going to give us the most sympathy.
It's
like,
kind of random when you
think, Professor Zay, he was my favorite character, other than Jody. Like, no one else is, like, so in love with Professor
Zay. I wanted Ko to come back. Like, for real this time.
Ko is maybe in another thing that you can buy that's in stores now, but, mentions at least. But, which we might be podcasting on sometime soon. I think that Iroh is definitely used with our sympathies here. I think it is. I agree with Allie. I think it's both playing on our sympathies.
My God, you agree with me?
I think it's a legitimate thing to be used because, I think they're allowed to do this. Like when you heard about Korra, it's like, oh my goodness, the potential here. You can, like, have this new series in this world basing off of old things. You can have callbacks, hopefully not too much, while it's still being its own thing. And I think this is, like, the prime example. Iroh's only here for one act of the episode, and he's used pretty effectively to advance Korra's character development. He's kind of he's like a deus ex machina of character development, actually. He's just like, oh, well, here's all your problems solved, Korra.
In really strange.
I keep looking up that term.
Thinking about it.
That's like a problem because like that Korra didn't like do it on her own. And she,
that's what I was saying before. Like I.
But they used Iroh, so we don't feel bad about it.
But
I don't think it was awful. Like I just think it was a little.
It wasn't awful. But thinking about it now, like before going into the episode, I thought she was gonna like handle it by herself. So it kind of makes me upset now.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I feel like they maximized Iroh's shock factor. Like they were, like, "This is gonna be awesome."
Yeah,
we're so small.
Yeah, like Brian was like, "I'm so happy with this episode now. I realize why."
Well, I don't even like take Iroh out. Honestly, I thought the first act of this episode was the best act. Like,
yes,
like just that entire first act was wonder and just incredible everything, and I loved it. I don't know, like it was just, and then the Iroh act was also very effective. I would say.
I think the third act might be my favorite, just because of everything.
Interesting. Well, I'm just curious how it, like, let's think about this from even a teenager's perspective, even if they never watched Avatar, but they're watching Korra. Like, this hadn't, they're like, who is this person? This doesn't make any sense. What the heck? Who's this guy? This episode made absolutely no sense.
They don't matter.
But for someone, like, they're banking on this emotional appeal a lot.
I give credit to Mike and Brian for not feeling they need to reintroduce Iroh.
Yes.
I think that's a good thing. Like, often, even in books, like...
Oh, God, yes, this is the most annoying thing ever.
In, like, a sequel, it's like, obviously you're not going to be reading this if you didn't read the first book, but now we need to recap, like, all the major events of the first book and
it's
reintroduce
so
the characters. And it's like, just tell us, just don't even do that. Like,
can we just move on, please?
Swear to God. Yeah, and I appreciate that they didn't do this with...
I mean, everyone knows who Iroh is at this point. And if they don't,
everyone
they should be watching
Korra.
Everyone
in the world knows
who Iroh is. I just meant from a plot perspective for people who've never watched Avatar, and they're watching this, it's like that didn't make a lot of sense. I mean, I'm not saying I don't appreciate it and I didn't love
it. You know
it,
what?
But
this makes naming General Iroh, it makes it kind of lesser now that we've seen actual Iroh.
Yeah, he's
true.
Oh, like Iroh number two.
Yeah.
Now that we
see
real Iroh, him being called General Iroh is unaffected.
Like we're disappointed.
It's not acceptable.
Yeah, okay. And the last thing I want to get onto is do you think the first two acts didn't contain enough, like, first act was all wonder and excitement and exploration of this world. The second act was trying to get this development for Korra. Then they jam all the plot into the third act. Do you think they should have spread out the plot more, if possible?
Yes. I feel like it could have been a two-parter.
I think
when you say it like that, I mean...
Jannora being captured, I guess, in act two was at the end of act two, I think. But,
yes.
Other than that, it's all very jam-packed. Like, on...
I would have liked more Jannora, like, in the library.
I would have liked more Jannora in general.
Yes.
Can we just have a solo Jannora episode?
Can we? Sokka got his own episode. Why can't Jannora have her own episode?
The Legend of Jannora.
I think the structure. I don't love that it's like first act is this, second act is this, but I think it was fine. I don't mind that they like. It's like I think if they didn't handle all the plot in the third episode as well as they did, it would be more objectionable. But I think it was handled well enough. And it also maybe I didn't also don't want to see Unalaq for the explanation period of the of the spirit world. Like, let's save him. I obviously don't like Unalaq.
Can we just, like, have Unalaq elsewhere? Like, yeah, does he have to be really creepy in the library? No, that was unnecessary.
Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to plug Audible, and then we're going to grade the episode and give some of your guys' thoughts.
Wait, can we talk about Iroh living in a trailer real quick?
Living in a trailer?
Like,
the tea house.
His little house thing. The first time I saw it, it looked like a trailer.
I thought it was the tea house. Like, from Ba Sing Se.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Wasn't it a lot bigger, I thought?
No.
Did they talk about the Jasmine Dragon? Isn't it? In the background?
They just showed it. The first time I watched the episode, I thought it was a trailer, and I was like, I was living in a trailer in the spirit world, and I was.
No,
like,
oh my god!
There's no shame in living.
I'm pretty sure it's the Jasmine Dragon.
Okay, well, look, you guys can look into that. I don't think we're gonna have time. Anyway, for you, be back in 30 seconds to a minute. For you, the fans of From the Spirit World podcast, Audible has a free audiobook download to go along with a free 14-day trial just for checking out their service. You can redeem this at audibletrial.com/FTSW, a free audiobook download, free 14-day trial, and you can support our podcast. Delaney today is going to recommend Wither by Lauren DeStefano.
Delaney is the only one on this podcast who reads.
Yeah, exactly.
Delaney, I just read a ridiculous amount.
Delaney, give us a brief overview of this book.
Yeah. All right, it's actually, like, it's a little more adult than the other books you recommend, but it's definitely young adult. It's, okay, so it's called Wither, I almost forgot. I have the second book here, so I got confused for a minute. It's part of the Chemical Garden trilogy, and so it's set in the future, and we've cured cancer. The human race is cancer-free, but it came at a cost. So the engineered these children called they're called the first generation, and they're cancer free, they're living well, like they're healthy, like they're practically immortal. But something went wrong in their children, and their children's children called the virus. Men only live to be 25 and women only live to be 20. What does this mean? So the first generations are experimenting on their children and their children's children. They want to save their children. They're watching their children die and they don't know what to do. And so what happens is first generations abduct young women to marry their sons, and they experiment on their children. So it's human trafficking, and like it's just a really weird mix of Sister Wives. If you ever watched that show, I didn't watch the show, but I know it existed. Sister Wives and normal sci-fi fare. It's a really odd mixture, and it's really entertaining. It's really like it's not very fast-paced, but while you're reading it, you don't get struck with that. It's more of a psychological thing, because it's first person. You're following this girl named Rhine, who's separated from her twin brother. So it's just really interesting about how she's gonna die in 4 years. This is terrifying. Cool. So it's just really psychological, and just her. I wouldn't say it's simple and complicated at the same time.
It sounds
just
sad.
You know, it's like
it is really sad.
My sister's boyfriend said once, "What if like the crust of bread like cure cancer?"
Okay.
Wow.
I don't know.
How deep in philosophical?
Thank you, Sam.
Okay. You know, like when you start like a new loaf of bread, there's like the crusty part. Yeah. Like at the front, yeah. And nobody likes to eat that.
Okay, I see.
What if?
Okay, anyway, thank you, Delaney, for.
And they're all free out, so you're not waiting for books, people. Go get them.
Wither by Lauren DeStefano. Check it out. Audibletrial.com/FTSW. Okay.
I'm trying so hard not to laugh.
Any last specific thoughts on the episode before we give our overall impressions?
Oh, the name of the episode makes no sense at all.
Yeah.
New spiritual age.
It's true. It doesn't make any sense.
I don't understand why. I mean, I guess it's a new spiritual age because Korra opened the second portal.
But it's... No.
It just actually happened in the episode.
Yeah, it does.
Like, the guide
don't
would
see
make
Republic more City. Like, we don't see... Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Actually, no. It would. The guide would make more sense if it was the title of this episode.
Yes,
maybe
that's
they
true.
Got them switched. Maybe. But this title would not make sense for last week's
either. And we changed this episode's title to Korra and Janora.
Kenora.
Korra and Janora's
bonding
episode,
fun
Kenora.
Times in the spirit world.
Yes. Okay. Or no, this episode should be called Legend of Janora.
Okay, yes, great. Let's grade this episode out of 10. 5 is an average episode of television. 10 is the best episode of television you've ever seen. Give us your overall thoughts and a grade. Let's start with Jeff.
I'll go with a 9. Ooh. I really enjoyed it. It's a rare one. For all the reasons that I mentioned in the beginning. So, Yeah. There you go.
Cool. Allie.
You know I'm going to give it a 9.5 just because it was so good, especially when comparing it to the last week. Okay, maybe I'll give it a 9, actually. I'll give it a 9, too. But, like, everything was so good about it. Like, I mean, it had its flaws, but just the animation and the writing and Jinora, it was so good.
Delaney, what do you think?
Oh, I'm going to have to give it... This is going back to how that Delaney girl can't grade things.
Who cares?
A 9. It's just, I really enjoyed it, and I know, and like, I'm still going back to I don't really have favorites anymore, because I think I gave Beginnings a 9 or something. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed this episode, and really the only problem I had with it was, I guess, kind of like downgrading Jinora and, just the baby Korra. The baby Korra was just, but I got over it because she's precious. Like, the plot device was terrible, but she was adorable, so I enjoyed watching it. And mainly, the score is so huge because the feels, like, it was just so exciting and beautiful, and Iroh knocked me into the floor. Like, just...
Yeah. Into the floor.
Yes, actually into the floor.
Actually,
into the floor.
Yeah.
So, 9.
Sam.
No, Mel's not here, so I can't base my grade on her.
Pick a new Mel.
Man, okay. I think I'll give it an 8.75.
Wow.
That's high.
That's generous for you.
I guess. I don't really want to give it a nine. I don't know. Thinking back, it isn't maybe it really I don't know how I feel if it's my favorite or not. I do want to cry, but not that much.
Okay. Thumbs up.
It was good. Good animation, good stuff, Jinora, whatever. Okay. Next.
Next. Okay, next. Good job, Sam. Okay, so I've been sitting at somewhere between a 9 and a 9.5 this entire time. I'm still a little undecided. I think right now where I am is a 9.2. I'm just in love with this episode. It's by far my favorite Korra episode. I mean, obviously Beginnings Part 2 is also very good. But after,
counting last season, though?
After that, just the Revelation is the only one that's even close to these two.
No, it would be fun to go back and listen to what our grades were for the...
Well, we didn't have the same streamlined grading system. But anyway, the animation was amazing.
The music my grading was amazing. System was also... Wait, Dylan, I have a question.
Yeah.
When you say it's your favorite episode, are you counting season one also?
Of Korra, yes, I am.
Oh, dang. Like, okay.
I mean, there's no standouts in book one.
I know, but
right?
I thought Wan would be your favorite episode.
Is that Wan?
Oh, that was a voice in the night, not your favorite. I don't get it.
I love the Revelation.
Oh, I love voice in the night.
Voice Night's also very good.
That's my favorite.
I'm an unpopular party who likes the spirit of competition. So,
I mean, this one's definitely up there with mine, but I don't know if it's my number one favorite.
I love almost every. The execution is flawless. It's amazing.
They're like your children.
I'm gonna watch this every.
I need to watch season
times.
One again.
Like, there's no Korra episode that I'm gonna watch 50 times. Like, I've watched several Avatar episodes. This one I might. This is just—it's just amazing.
It's really
good. Yeah, I actually enjoyed watching this a second time because usually I'm just like, God, I have to watch this a second time. I hate Dylan, but now it's like this is much better. I enjoyed watching this.
You don't hate Korra.
I've never watched it a second
Korra
time.
Podcast that you hate watching Korra.
I don't hate watching Korra. It's just like I have a good memory, so it gets on my nerves after watching something
Korra,
twice.
So it's okay.
I don't watch it twice.
Oh, well, dang.
I watch every... Yes, I watch episodes twice and enjoy doing so because I have a bad memory. And this episode, I very much enjoyed watching a second time.
More of a guideline than an actual rule.
Yeah, it's not a rule. It's not a hard rule. Okay, so let's get into some of your guys' feedback. Four of you sent voicemails, actually. On this episode. I should say we're not going to get to Alex's voicemail that he sent on last week's episode.
What did he say, though?
I don't remember. I'm sorry, Alex.
This goes back to Dylan having a bad memory.
We're going to play the voicemails we missed at probably in like a recap, season recap podcast. But anyway, Sarah sent a voicemail and it didn't work. I don't know why, but I apologize, Sarah. I can't play it because I think SpeakPipe screwed up. But anyway, we have three voicemails. Let's start with Ty from the forums. Ty Dao, an old DF member. Yay, Ty.
Yes, people. This is Tato.
Okay,
I just got to say that this episode of Korra was the best episode so far this season, and I really loved seeing Iroh in the spirit world. It was a nice surprise, and I can buy it. I can buy that he was in the spirit world after his death, his physical death. And I did not expect to see Zay's corpse lying there in the library. It was weird, and I don't know what Unalaq's intentions are. I still don't know. It's not clear to me. Maybe I'm missing something. But hopefully it's in the next episode. It'll be cleared out. And thank you. I just hate Unalaq. Bye-bye.
Yeah, me too, dude.
Nice ending.
Yeah.
I just hate him.
Bye. I also hate Unalaq, but we'll see a different opinion on that soon.
Yeah. Does anyone like
Ty's him? Ty's awesome. Notes, I agree that it was really shocking to see Zay's corpse. Like, I think that was awesome that
they went there.
First of all, it's a kid's show, and then it's like, oh my god, there's a dead body on my screen.
No, they should be.
And I think the other thing he said was, I forget. Wow, bad memory.
You literally just listened to it.
What else did he say?
He hates Unalaq.
You're important.
No, there was before that. It was after Zay.
You were the worst.
Oh, they got away with. He thinks they pulled off Iroh. I think I've seen that sentiment across echoed. I don't love the explanation why I got there, but I agree they pulled it off. Okay, yes. Next we have Felicity, who sends us voicemail as normal.
Hi, it's Felicity again. Really liked the episode this time. Two things. Do you think that because they showed Iroh again, it's a possibility that they might reveal how he entered the spirit world the first time? And because Unalaq can apparently separate souls in the spirit world, do you think that it's probable that he might attempt to separate Rava from the Avatar?
I didn't think about that.
Okay, two interesting points. Let's start with the first one. No, I don't think they're going to show how Iroh got to the
spirit world. Iroh is pretty much just like a one-shot.
I think this was a fan. This is mainly fan,
So
I feel like it's going to be this will tide you over. We're not actually going to tell you what
I'm
it is.
I'm very convinced that Eren Ehaz has the story in his head. And I really hope they don't attempt it without him.
And I hope it's not a comic.
Yeah, unless Eren's writing it, then that'd be awesome. So second one,
I totally see it.
Yeah, I actually hadn't heard that before.
I'm scared.
I've heard most theories, but
no, wait. But he can separate souls, not spirits.
Well, think about how Vatu's Vatu's I'm going to destroy you for good this time. We thought that was impossible, but if he separates them,
that doesn't mean she'll disappear forever, though. Like she said, as darkness grows, light fades, but vice versa.
But that's what I'm talking about. He keeps talking about he'll put
Rava in the tree or something.
Right, so there's a lot of possibilities.
I don't think he could take out Rava because he could separate souls, but not spirits. Souls and spirits are two different things.
Well, is that a different thing? It's not clear.
If it's the whole reincarnation thing and Rava's kind of in charge of it and it's the soul's I could see Rava being part of the Avatar soul. She's the Avatar spirit.
I agree with Delaney. I think this is a possibility. I think trapping Rava in the tree is a possibility. I think the more prevalent fandom theory is that before this episode was that Unalaq would merge with Vatu to become the anti-Avatar. I think this episode lends credence to this theory because we saw that Unalaq can manipulate souls. So he could maybe manipulate his own soul and merge it with Vatu.
Destroy the Avatar entirely.
Or just destroy the Avatar. I think all of these are possibilities. Given our knowledge of the episode descriptions, I think the anti-Avatar is more likely.
Really?
Yeah.
That's stupid.
I don't want it, though.
The episode description the episode description of the last episode, spoilers, is basically Korra finds out a way to fix everything. So,
but at what cost? That's not really fixing everything. That's
but at what
making
cost?
It worse.
So is... So Korra's...
That's not fixing
Vatu's
it,
Korra
though.
Actually dies and becomes the legend of Jador for the next three seasons.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, and lastly, we have a voicemail from Toon Gal on the forums. It doesn't say much, but she's awesome, so she gets to have a voicemail.
Toon Gal, woo!
Yay! Hello, this is Toon Gal from the forums, and I just wanted my voice on the podcast, and I want to see if this would make it.
Aww.
So, I really liked the episode. It was just amazing, and I think the way it ended, it was just about as bad as when Lin lost her bending. So, I'm just going to speak for everyone and say, Jenora, no!
Yes.
Yes, I feel summed up.
Bigger emotional impact, Lin losing her bending or the end of this episode?
Lin losing her bending.
End of this episode.
I bawled my eyes out when Lin lost her bending.
No,
like, bawled my eyes out.
The most powerful scene of anything I've ever seen in my life.
Really? Wow.
No way! Are you kidding me?
Wait. Thank you, Sam.
As someone who's way more emotionally attached to Jenora, definitely this episode for me.
Definitely this one.
Okay, I'm not saying I'm not emotionally attached to Jenora. I love a Jenora, and it definitely hurt me. But I mean, I bawled my eyes out when Lin lost her bending because Lin was a big part of season one, and it was oh my god, Lin.
Because Jenora's gone. It's like Tenzin's reaction, though.
I know.
And Korra's reaction too.
I think,
but Lin, Lin's crying. And it's a connection to her mother.
I'm not as attached to Lane as I am to Janora. I'm with Dylan on this one.
I think both of these were structured to be emotionally devastating. I think Lynn's was meant to be a bigger deal, was more cinematic. Had the
I still cry when I listen to Lynn's music.
Has it had its own theme written for it? Had it,
which is stupid.
The exquisite scene at the end.
Thank
you, Sam.
I agree that also this episode was supposed to be devastating, but it's supposed to. It wasn't. I don't think it was supposed to have as much of an emotional impact.
They didn't play dramatic music. It couldn't be. It couldn't possibly be as bad as there wasn't dramatic
I think we know that Janora's going to be okay in the end, so that's fine.
No, Janora's going to die, obviously. That's
going to die eventually.
Everyone will die.
Funny.
Okay.
Chitara's going to die anyway. No, you can just stop it right now.
XEOCX13 emailed us.
That's
this episode exceeded my expectations. There are two storylines. They're both interesting. Away from Masami, I think it meant Asami, but Masami and Bolin. Nonsense. On to more important topics. Do you guys agree that that it's good to step away from Republic City for this episode?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Republic City's been annoying.
Yeah.
I hate it. I don't like Republic City anymore, especially from what happened last episode.
Back to the email. Wasn't expecting Korra to separate from Janora early on. As for Korra being a toddler for most of the episode, it really displays how Korra is truly frightened by these dark times and not as tough as she seems. The return of Iroh had me crying. Just as he guided Aang, he guides Korra. The tea party was remarkably similar to us in Wonderland, LOL. Korra is definitely growing on me. When she views life from a positive light, the world gets better. Maybe this will be used in the finale to turn dark spirits back into light.
Hey, look, someone agrees with me. No, we both had the same idea at the same time.
Yeah.
Watch me.
This is me talking. The Korra being frightened. I agreed, this was show Korra's inner child. She's actually been frightened all this time, and she's using fear as an expression of that. I don't love that. I don't know. I don't love
it. Yeah.
Well, you explain that.
I like it a little bit.
I agree this is what they're doing. I don't love how
they literally turned to trial.
I think it degrades Korra, in my opinion.
Yes.
Back to the email. As for Unalaq, he's up there with Azula and Ozai as the best villains in the Avatar universe. Not sure if he'll use Vatu for anti-Avatar powers, or maybe Vatu is tricking him. So Dylan speaking again. Yeah, I disagree with this a lot.
I would rank Vatu up just because of his how melodramatic he is.
Vatu's a better villain. Yeah. I just love Vatu in this episode.
He's hilarious.
Funny. Yeah,
he's so funny, and it's not intentionally funny, which is the best part.
It's like what they said in the season one finale commentary, how soap opera acting works better for cartoons.
Yeah,
and live action. Yeah. We're talking about Jason Isaacs as Zhao.
Oh God,
I just don't think Unalaq's been executed well in any regard. I don't know.
It's just because we don't know his motives. That's literally it.
They were trying to be different with him in the beginning, but then it was so obvious that he was bad. It was what's the point of this anymore?
Yeah,
and then we have Vatu, who's so ridiculously bad, it's hilarious.
Backstory. So they kind of balance each other out.
They gave him a backstory right away, but that was other than that, I can't distinguish him. Zhao was awesome. Zhao was kind of the same thing as this, except Zhao, his motivations are clear, and he is so, it's kind of, he's like Vatu, he's so over the top and funny that we love him. But we don't need to love Unalaq. I just don't find him interesting, I guess, is my opinion.
Yeah.
But, we don't know anything about his motives yet. Maybe when we do, you'll like him more.
Maybe.
Well, and it's the whole contrast with Varric, because Varric has all this personality, and he's different, and then it's Unalaq, you're just this
mean guy.
Okay, back to the email. Wan Chitong is a jerk. Professor Zay's corpse made me laugh, which is kind of dark and twisted.
That kind of made me chuckle too.
Oh, Ali is the evil one here. Okay,
I'm just saying it was crap.
I think I probably laughed at that honestly.
Because
I laugh at horror films and stuff.
The poor man.
The horror films are dumb.
I kind of laugh at I laugh as a response to.
Says Ali wouldn't even watch horror movies. Me and Mel.
Yeah, because I don't like them.
Anyway, but back to email. Back to email again. I have no idea how this will turn out in the end. Will Rava contact with Korra? And what about the rest of the crew? In the trailer, it shows both Mako and Bolin fighting near one of the portals. We haven't seen that yet. That's right. So many questions.
They also go into the portal.
And then they say 9 out of 10 best episode this season. So yeah, there's actually stuff in the trailer we still haven't seen yet.
There's a lot.
Not a lot.
The
Comic Con trailer is all we're talking about. We saw most of the stuff in this episode that we hadn't previously seen. We saw the
Asami and Bolin being sad.
Yeah, that we haven't seen Asami Bones being
That's
sad.
That's probably next episode.
Well, actually, I think Asami was sad when she looked at.
No, Frenchie. Like it's
there's two Asami sad scenes.
Yeah. What if they just kill Mako and that's why they're sad?
I would not care.
Why wouldn't they be happy? No, I'm joking.
I mean, really? Yeah.
Anyway, we also didn't see makotumbling.tumblr.com with Bolin. That's actually one of the tumblers we own. You can check that out.
That's Bolin and has tumblers.
And also bolininthebackground.tumblr.com, but that one I haven't updated.
Yeah, everybody hates Mako.
Anyway.
And Ali Translated. Again, that.
Oh, yeah. Follow at Ali Translated on
Stop!
Twitter. I've actually updated it recently. Yeah, you can.
Oh my God,
the description is there. Anyway.
Somebody deleted one of my Facebook comments when I translated like the whole thing.
So I've just posted as a comment.
Because it was annoying. Translated. It was like, you're annoying.
Okay, anyway.
You just messed everything up.
Thanks. I think I read stuff from the forums. Thanks, guys, for sending in feedback. Yeah, that's kind of it. Predictions, we don't even have time for this. Next week, two episodes. First one's seemingly going to be more Republic City centric, and then the next one's going to be Harmonic Convergence.
I'm going to die.
Are you actually going to die?
Wait, yes. So there are only three more episodes in the series.
There
right?
are four more episodes in the Wait. Series, two each of the next 2 weeks.
Are we British?
Oh, so we have two-parters.
What?
Yes, two. It's next week is not actually a two-parter. Nick is just sticking them together.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because Nick thinks they're cool.
Well,
also Thanksgiving.
Nick's probably no.
Yes.
I think
reminiscent of the the thriller.
The thriller plan, yeah, which is the season 3. Not actually reminiscent because these are separate weeks, but
season. Okay, I get it now.
The end of season 3. They aired them all during the same week of.
They did the same thing with Danny Phantom.
Yeah.
I knew you said Danny Phantom. I was like, is she whispering something over there?
I think Nick honestly wants to end Korra sooner than later because the ratings are kind of bad.
Probably.
They're dumb.
I don't really know how that makes sense, though, honestly, but whatever. Trying to build, I think there is some legitimacy to building up momentum for the finale.
Maybe they should get better shows.
And a two-parter is the way to do that. Get shows.
Get better advertising.
And that. Have you, seen what shows are airing now? They're airing, The Haunted Hathaways.
If you're only advertising on Nick and Nick and no one's
what?
Watching Nick
no.
to begin with, then
I'm kidding, Sam.
Anyway, so yeah, give us your thoughts on this episode. I've been your main host, Dylan. Co-hosts have been Mel. Nope, Mel's not on this.
Oh my god,
that's
this
a reaction.
Funny, you
Mel's
forgot
on every podcast ever. Okay,
Mel, if you're watching this or listening,
she's not going to listen to this.
Probably
she's
not
watching.
Honestly.
That's awkward.
Sam,
she's
Delaney,
not this.
Jeff, and Allie.
She wasn't texting me back.
I host, produce, and edit the podcast. Co-creator AJ. Tech directors AJ, Kevin, Jeff. Musical credits to the Ishida brothers, Jeremy Zuckerman, and Luke Tripp. I should say that AJ created the pre-Korra quote lodges in the beginning. Logo and banner by Kevin Coppa. Don Wufeng is owned by Jake. Contributors to the podcast are Gareth and Sierra. Yay,
G-Man and Sierra.
Oh, by the way, I figured out who Sierra is on the forum, so if you want me to say your username instead of Sierra, then you can message me that, Sierra. But yeah. It wasn't hard. I just didn't realize it before. I apologize.
G-Man and Sierra.
He's dumb. Don't feel bad.
I'm pretty dumb. Ship G-Man and Sierra. Okay.
Yes.
Great. Any last thoughts on this episode? Obviously, it's amazing. We probably missed stuff. I don't know. I kind of wanted to have a post-season discussion of this. Yeah, this is the first episode other than Beginnings that we finished the podcast. I just want to watch it again.
I want to watch this thing again.
The Sting? Yeah, I do want to watch The Sting again. The Sting was actually, really good.
Yeah, I like The Sting.
Yeah.
It's really sad how surprised
you
are when we watch a good episode of Korra.
I have very high expectations for these last four episodes.
This episode really exceeded my expectations.
Yeah,
so.
I didn't think I was going to be this excited. It was like, oh my god, Iroh and all this stuff.
You know, that's a good metric we should start tracking, how it exceeded our expectations.
I was so excited for this episode. I knew this was going to be insane.
I can only go downhill from here.
This was on par with what I expected. If you enjoyed today's podcast, consider donating to From the Spirit World. All donations go directly to supporting our podcast.
And you get a cool nickname.
And you get a cool... And you,
wait, do you? I didn't know that.
G-Man and Ceramus, where have you been, Allie?
I've been to college.
You said this last week.
You can donate by going to dongwufeng.net/podcast, which is our podcast page, and clicking donate at the top. And you can donate through credit card, bank account, or PayPal. Whatever you want. Any money amounts are welcome. Thank you very much. You can, if you want to see who we are, you can visit our podcast bios on downmoofang.net/podcast. Click on bios at the top.
Sam is the queen of bios.
Sam,
have we put Mel's new bio?
Sam wrote Mel's. I need to read this. And it's up on the podcast page, and it's great, and you should read it along with the rest of us.
I should write everybody's bio. Email us at Dylan at downmoofang.net.
Follow us on Tumblr and Twitter at downmoofang. And Tumblr, you should really follow our Tumblr. We have like 1,500 followers now. It's awesome. Downmoofang.tumblr.com.
You're a Tumblr fan too.
And
actually, no, don't follow mine.
And follow at Ellie Translated on Twitter.
It's so great.
Send us voicemail. If you want to send it, I think the only voicemails for the rest of, like, until Corinth that we're going to air are voicemails on the episode that you have to send between the hours of 8:30 and 9:30 p.m. Eastern time.
Get on it, people.
Yeah. I understand. But if you send it afterwards, like I said, I'll try to compile them into a post-season podcast, which we'll do.
It'll just be a parade of voicemails.
But yeah, we're, like, very past 90 minutes right now, and we don't have time for anything. Who cares? But yeah, last week I should say your thoughts on this episode, because I have that up. I told you guys to grade the episode on Tumblr, and many of you have been. 24 people voted on the episode. 11.
Wow, that's a lot.
Already in the
like
hour.
In comparison to usual, it's like 5 people have voted, 2 people have voted.
11 out of 24 gave it a 9 out of 10, 10 out of 24 gave it a 10 out of 10. Two out of 24 gave it an 8 out of 10, and one troll gave it a less than 5 out of 10.
Something I should not say on this.
I'm gonna give it.
Wait, is this the rating for like this episode?
This is A New Spiritual Age, yeah.
Still hate Janora so much that...
Last week you guys were down on the episode overall.
It sucked.
Most of
you... True.
The plurality was a 8 out of 10, but 6 and 7 were up there. But yeah.
I'll give it like a, a 3?
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I remember, yeah.
Okay.
Everybody hates him.
Yeah, any last thoughts before we go?
I am still crying.
I want Bolin to do something important because he's done nothing.
He is going to do something important.
The description is Bolin saves the day.
Oh, well.
I'm pretty sure he's going to be dressed as Nuptup the entire time. That is my prediction.
Yeah, hopefully he isn't being a Poofies.
Last thing I want to mention. Someone mentioned that they're surprised, the email we got mentioned, surprised that Janora and Korra separated the entire episode. I wanted to see more bonding times, but it seems they did bond. They like grabbed onto each other a lot.
Oh my god,
awesome.
I
want to
see
it.
So cute.
Yeah.
So cute. I want to see like a comic with like baby Korra and Janora.
Yeah, that would be so weird.
And I like, and obviously female bonding times, we've been asking for it. We got it in this episode, although they were separated for half the episode, so...
Does it count as bonding as, like, the longest time they were together, they were, like, in some weird wormhole? Does it
yes,
count?
It counts.
Okay.
Yeah, they exchanged, like, what, 5 words?
Honestly, yeah. It was, I think, I don't know. I feel like that was a function of the plot, though, not so much,
yeah.
I feel like any two characters would not really have talked to each other in this plot, but... Yeah, I still thought it was great, obviously. And
think about how awkward it would have been if it was like Korra and Tinza doing this.
I'm kind of happy they separated Janora and Korra because Janora got to shine more, I guess. You know, like,
yes. She got her own B-side.
Yeah, anyway.
And Korra wasn't being all, Janora, watch out! Like,
yeah.
Also, I need that spiritual cake that doesn't make you gain any weight.
Yes,
same.
Iroh, I want your recipe, bro.
Just die. Yeah. That's what you should do.
You should die, exactly. That's how
wow.
you get access
oh my
to
god, thanks, Sam.
I mean, how else are you going to go? Iroh said he died and went to spiritual.
He didn't have a choice. I probably won't.
There was a train station, Dylan.
I'm going somewhere else.
Yeah, he went to King's Cross and then he chose to go to spiritual.
This is not Harry Potter.
Okay, what
yes,
do we,
it is.
What do we want to end on?
I don't
know. Janora, no!
Here we go, that's a good one.
Why?
Did anyone say anything weird this episode?
Love that.
Well, all of Unalaq's lines were... He's creepy.
Sam was first.
Do we mean podcast or do we? Yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway.
I was first, yeah.
Say something. I don't know.
Oh,
Janora.
Whatever you want.
Janora.
Anyway, thanks guys for listening. 1, 2, 3. Janora!
Janora!
Spirit cake!